This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 74 of The Girlfriend Bracket. I am Regina George.
I'm Katie Heron.
I'm Karen Smith.
And I'm Gretchen Wieners.
If you're listening to this, it is officially Mean Girls Day. Today is the day famously mentioned in the movie when Katie's crush turns around and asks her what day it is. And so there's been all sorts of tweets and Facebook posts with people talking about how much they loved the movie. And can you guys believe that movie came out 12 years ago?
Where is the time gone?
It's a long time.
Right? Right? I was 21 when that movie came out.
Chris don't want to know how old I was.
How old were you, Katie?
I was 10.
You were 10 when 10. Mean Girls came out.
Yep. Oh, little Katie. My.
Right?
Little Katie watching big Katie on the screen.
Oh, man. And now Lindsay Lohan's like cutting her finger off a boat just all sorts of other Lynn sanity. Where did it all go wrong, Lindsay? Where did it go wrong?
Who knows?
I think it went wrong when she stopped being a redhead. I'm going to call it like it is. Like, she went through a phase where she was dyeing her hair constantly. Mm-hmm. And the minute she left red behind, it just all went downhill. She should have just stayed a ginger and just let the prosperity
come. She turned her back on her people.
Exactly. And so, get what you deserve. There's also another holiday, Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm in a food coma right now.
I saw that. Now, what exactly was that? Like, I wasn't really clear. It was like carrots and prunes?
Yeah. So, I made this dish called simis, which is a traditional root vegetable casserole, for Rosh Hashanah. It's, carrots, sweet potatoes, and you can add prunes if you want to. It's basically a sweet dish because on Rosh Hashanah, you're supposed to eat sweet foods, hoping that you'll have a sweet new year. So, it's a root vegetable casserole with like a honey and cinnamon glaze. And it's one of my favorite foods to make.
Hmm. Well, now I feel less bad for the 3 Kit Kats and the pack of peach rings I had for dinner. I'm going to have a very sweet year if that's true. We also have another reason to celebrate. We have 2 new patrons. Thank you, Miranda and Destiny, for supporting the show. We really do appreciate that. And let's go ahead and get started. So, Chris, you and I played a little bit of Magic this weekend, and you went to another PPTQ. How did it go?
It did not go the best, but it was still worth the trip. We trekked up, my friend Ben and I, up to Gnome Games in Green Bay, and always they have great customer service, they have a good selection of games, and they have a wonderful place to play, so I'm always pleased to go up there. We only had, I believe it was 15 people for the PPTQ, and I guess I had been expecting more just because there's not too many other game stores around that area, so most people probably would go there to play, but I think they had an event the day before, so it wasn't quite as crowded as it probably could be. I continue to open just like insane pools. I'm just having really good luck with this set, so I'm hoping that the same can be said for this coming weekend. I ended up getting a Sky Sovereign console flagship, and that was pretty awesome.
Wow.
I know.
It was really cool. I decided to... The first iteration of a deck that I built for the event did not work quite as well as I had wanted it to. It was supposed to be a Bant deck that had the 1 Vedalken flyer in it. I had like 2 of those, the Skyship, and just like make a bunch of energy and, you know, try to pump things, but it just didn't really come together. And later on in the event, it actually did, but for the first couple rounds, it didn't go so well. I ended up making a second deck that I was sideboarding into that was a red-white deck, but it wasn't, like, all vehicles. Like, that wasn't the whole to-do. But I had some good stuff in there. It seems like red-white vehicles is kind of where it's at in most things. But I really still enjoy the set. I think I went, did I even win it? No, I didn't. I don't think I won a match at all. Like I said, the deck wasn't too good for like the first two rounds. The third round, I ended up having to play Ben, and we were both like not doing well. I'm like, I would just concede to you anyway, just because I want you to get further. And then the last round, the guy I played was like, you know, I probably don't have a chance, but would you mind conceding to me? I'm like, not at all. I'm not emotionally invested in this whatsoever. And he was like, okay. I'm like, I just want to, you know, try to get, you know, Planeswalker points. If I do, then I do. If I don't, I still got some cool cards out of it. I haven't drafted the set yet, which I would like to do. So far, all I've done is sealed. But I would still go to sealed PPTQs for this. I just need to get, I think, a little more practice. And then I would like to draft it, which I'm hoping to maybe do tomorrow. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But I still think the set's really cool. I think there's a lot of interesting mechanics in it, and even stuff I didn't notice before until after, you know, playing with it this weekend. I had a couple days in between, you know, the pre-release. I had like, what, a week? And then I kind of dove back into it, and it was just like interesting to kind of try to look at it from a different perspective and be like, oh, I didn't even think that I could do this or this or this. And I feel like there's a lot of options, and I still really dig the set. So I'm just really super hyped for getting to do it again in Atlanta this weekend. So it should be a good time.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of practice at Kaladesh Sealed at GP Atlanta.
Yeah, it's a last minute thing, but I'm really hype about getting to play with it more. And hopefully I will continue my streak of opening up awesome pools.
What a great story for your top A profile, though. They're going to be like, you know, Chris, what inspired you to go? And you're like, I don't know. I just bought my ticket the week of and something just hit me. And like, that's a great story. Like, that's something you're thinking of, that angle. Like, that's awesome.
You got one life to live, yo. YOLO. MTV.
So you also somehow got involved with a bit of a fiasco in another PPTQ. And I'm anxious to hear what Katie thinks about this, you know, with her judge expertise. What happened?
Okay. So on Saturday, I had to work, so I didn't go to any events. Later in the evening, Ben had come over here after his event that he went to in Illinois, and he said that at the PPTQ that he went to, they did not draft for the top eight. And he was pretty disappointed because he's like, you know, I probably could have gone farther in this, you know, if we had actually drafted in the top eight instead of having to play with the same pool that I had. And I was like, isn't that kind of, you know, unheard of that you would not draft it? And he's like, yeah, he's like, a lot of places will draft it. This is kind of a little strange. So I guess at the beginning of, before anything started, he was like, we're not drafting the top eight. What's up with that? That's kind of weird. And he was told that it was so they would have more prize support because they would get 90 packs instead of 60 or something. And then there were still some players that were not happy. They registered their decks. And then after that, since people were still unhappy, the TO said that they would do a vote. And the vote had to be unanimous. And if it was, then they would agree to draft the top eight. But by that point, everyone's registered their pool. If you pulled like some insane shit, like who's going to be like, yeah, you know what? Let's draft the top eight after all. So that wasn't going to happen. Yeah. So there was a little bit of a discussion in the Magic Milwaukee Facebook group about it. And I kind of got involved in it because Ben had voiced his displeasure about how things were handled. And the TO started going back and forth with him about how it was handled and like why him not doing well was like the fault of the store. And he was trying to just explain, you know, this is just not how this is typically conducted. And all I did was hear excuses from you the whole time about why you couldn't do this and why you couldn't do that. You know, everything from time considerations to a larger payout, all these other things, like why didn't this happen? And apparently a lot of people had been really upset about it. They tried to say they announced it on their Facebook, which they didn't. They didn't say anything about not drafting the top eight. And I was like, well, it sounds like you're not doing this the way you should be, and Wizards should be aware of it if you're not. And they're like, well, we are doing it correctly. There's no requirement for a top eight draft in a sealed deck event. It's up to the individual store. And so then I got on Twitter and I was like, well, I just want to know because I don't know. Like, is this a thing? You know, should you be drafting the top eight? And it seemed to be that, you know, judges and other players were like, yeah, you should definitely, you know, be doing that. And it just kind of became like a point of contention. The TO was trying to argue that they don't have to do it that way and that they wish that players would understand that and that Wizards would make it easier for people to find that information that says it's by store. But it was just like a big, huge to-do, and the players involved were not pleased. There was a lot of people saying they wouldn't come back because of it. It was like a big to-do. The thing that just kind of really lit me off about the whole thing was, I understand if they're like, this is how we wanted to do it, whether or not someone agrees with it, but they went back and edited their post where the first thing they said was, the thing is, the event details were posted on our events page and calendars. We decided on the structure during sanctioning, not at the start of the event. Then they went on to say about how they went and conducted a vote. And they actually said, we did offer everyone at the start of the event the choice of a top eight draft, and it was voted down. They took that part out. They edited it and then said, we did post in our prior events sealed deck with top eight draft. This one just stated sealed deck, which is a lie. And so I have a big problem with that, because it's like, you know, I was going to let this go and say, okay, fine, whatever. But now you're actively lying to me. I wasn't even involved. You're lying to the players that played in the event. They're responding to your posts now. What does that say about you as a store? Because now you're admitted you did a vote, and now you're saying that you didn't. Which one is it? Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is something that Wizards should know about, because whether or not this store has ever had any issues in the past, the concern of Ben and other players was that, what if this becomes a thing? Because the word on the street was that another local TO, which is rather large in our area, is going to be doing the same thing. And that's a problem.
Okay. And Katie, what's like the official stance on this? Like, I mean, is a store allowed to not do a draft? And if so, like, how much notice do they have to give you?
So I had this come up when I think summer before last, I was judging three PPTQs in one day that were all kind of being run together and in the same location. And the last one of the day happened to be sealed, and it was starting at like 4 p.m., which when you have a 5-round tournament and a draft takes a long time and goes late. And I had talked to the TO, they'd put out a flyer, and then I was thinking about it and the time concerns. And I was like, hey, what if we just didn't do a draft? And he was like, well, we could have done that if we hadn't already advertised it, because Wizards' rule is, if you advertise something, you stick to that. Even if you say it was 2 months before, they'd come out with this flyer that said, we're going to top eight draft. And then a month before, we come out with a new flyer that says correction. No, that doesn't fly. If there was, if the store said it's going to be a certain way, it's going to be a certain way. And I think that you could like increase prize pool, but you definitely can't go below what you said it was. So we checked into it. And sealed all the way through is definitely a format that you can do. It's not very often done, because a lot of players, like Chris said, if you get stuck with a bad pool, like in the top eight playing against good pools is not very fun. And also you get a lot of practice drafting, which you don't usually get to do competitively unless you're making day two of a sealed GP or something. And so, you can do sealed all the way through. You can cut the top eight. You cannot vote for anything. Especially, I feel like that puts really bad implications on players. Like, if it has to be unanimous and one person's like, no, I don't want to do it that way, then everybody's kind of like, oh, well, you suck. You don't want to do it the way everybody else wants to do it. I mean, that's just, like, not a good position to put anybody in. So I worry that this tournament might get invalidated if they weren't doing things the way that they said they were going to. But obviously that's up to Wizards, and sometimes, you know, the TO and Wizards can talk it out. But I do hope that the TO gets corrected, because that just sounds like a bad player experience, not only for Ben, but for other people who might have been in the same boat but not as vocal about it.
Yeah.
And when you say invalidated, does that mean that whoever won the PPTQ, they would not get to keep their invite to the RPTQ?
That is correct. The whole tournament is nulled. And I believe they take away your Planeswalker points.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's intense.
See, and I would feel really bad.
It can be bad.
Because the person that won is like a friend of ours. So I would feel
like
I don't want to rob him of anything. It's just that, you know, it just seemed like it was, I mean, the bottom line that I kind of gave her was that it sounds like you just kind of did this all very poorly. Like you just ran it poorly, you know, and then I'm glad you brought up, Katie, about getting experience with drafting, because apparently one of the complaints they supposedly received was from players saying that, quote, drafting was like too hard or too difficult and they didn't want to deal with it. And that's one reason why they didn't want
to
do it.
But if you're trying to get into like the upper echelons of a game, you need to know how to draft. Like if you have aspirations getting on the pro tour, you can't just be good at constructed. Like you have to be a well-rounded player. Mm-hmm. So what are they trying to do exactly?
Exactly. Yeah. I agree 100%. It's like, what do you, like, where are you going with this? It's like on the pro.
Yeah. Okay. So the takeaway is, because they advertised the event as just a sealed event and there was no conditions or exclusions, that led people to assume that there was going to be a draft, and because they didn't specify it, and had they specified it from the get-go, there wouldn't be an issue. Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, even when we went to the one on Sunday, like Ben was like, please call them, make sure they're doing a draft for top 8, because if they're not, he's like, I'm not going. And I'm like, I don't blame you. But sure enough, they were.
And how much notice is enough notice? Like, did you need to know before you even pre-regged and walked in the door? Or like, you know, let's say you open your pools, you see your pools, and then like, where's the cutoff for that?
I feel like it has to be whenever you start advertising for the event.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess I don't know for sure what the cutoff is, but I would assume if you say you're going to do one thing at any point in time, you need to stick with like basically the first thing you say, or at least talk to Wizards after that about like, hey, we decided to do this instead. And then there's steps to take to change formats or whatever it may be.
Man, that would make me paranoid. Like I can relate to Ben and the call them and make sure, because I would be, I would want to do that. Like that's a really crummy situation.
Mm, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and I had no idea it could lead to like invalidating Planeswalker points. Like that's rough.
Well, and Wizards is pretty reasonable. So like maybe it'll get worked out and it'll be fine. I know my first PPTQ, that I judged, one of the players who made top 8 had won the last PPTQ, and we didn't realize that you couldn't keep playing in them. And I, like, we kind of redid the standings and basically just took him out. And I talked to Wizards and I was like, hey, I didn't know this. and it ended up being fine, and they weren't going to invalidate it because we explained everything that happened. But, you know, I mean, they're reasonable people too, so they'll do what needs to be done.
Yeah, I hope so. So I played some Magic this past weekend. I haven't played a lot of Magic since Legion came out. My world has largely been World of Warcraft, but the release of Kaladesh and specifically Cathartic Reunion made me get out of bed. so I went to FNM on Friday and 4-0'd.
Nice!
I faced Mono Green Devotion, Blue Moon, Living End, and a friend of mine was on Kiln Fiend, which is sort of like Death Shadow, but you're using Kiln Fiends.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did very, very well. Cathartic Reunion is the truth. so if you're thinking of playing Dredge, I was making a joke on Twitter that I want to get my Cathartic Reunions altered so Pia could be Jesus, because every time I cast it, I felt like I was being hugged by Jesus. It was just a glorious feeling. You know, the sigh on my opponent, in my opponent's, you know, when I, Cathartic Reunion, and they're like I just got very used to that sigh where they're like, I don't really know what to do. I also got to cast Collected Brutality for the first time, and that card is amazing. I think the best moment of the night was when I cast it, and my opponent is like, you know, sort of jotting things down in his notebook, and he goes, so which mode are you using? And I replied, all of them. And he was just like, you mean the... okay. And then he shows me his hand and I was like, yeah, take that. That's dead. Two to you. All right, pass to you. And I'm discarding like a Grave Troll and Amalgam and just having a really good time. So the deck feels really, really good. I know that Infect made a really big splash at the SCG Classic this past weekend, which is going to influence my deck choice for SCG Milwaukee, which is coming up soon. And I'm a little worried about that, because if Infect is popular, that means Ad Nauseam will have a really bad time of it. And so I still have to decide what deck I'm going to play, but it felt really good to to give Modern Dredge a go again, and we'll just see if I can keep it up. So speaking of SCG, the first SCG Open, first big event of New Standard took place this past weekend. Chris Van Meter won the whole damn thing.
Sweet, sweet.
Friend of the show. He won with a red-white vehicle's DePaula, Hallie. DePaula.
Yep. She's the real deal.
Yes. She was all over the place, and I thought of you, and I was like, oh, Hallie. And I'm so excited to see that. So, Hallie, looking at the top 64, you know, and all the decks that did well and the decks that were featured, what were sort of your takeaways from this first weekend?
Well, the first thing that I noticed was that there were a ton of smugglers copters.
Hello.
Just like skies full of them, like copters everywhere. And I guess like it's not that surprising because, you know, it's an aggressive card that also lets you, you know, it lets you loot. Even when you're on the defensive, you can, you know, whenever it attacks or blocks, you get to loot, which is really nice. And, you know, aggro decks generally don't have that much card selection. So when you have, like, a large threat, a large evasive threat that you can crew really easily, and it gets around sweepers, you know, if your opponent, you know, casts, like, a Fumigate or, like, even a Kozilek's Return or something, like, you still have a creature on the battlefield, and you just need... you just need like one creature with one power to crew it, and you just hit them for three and loot again. So it seemed really strong, and I'm not surprised that CVM managed to win with the vehicles deck, because it seemed really strong. And there were games where it looked like he just kind of won out of nowhere with you know, the 5/3 haste vehicle. So yeah, it seems like a really strong deck right now.
Katie, what did you take away from the top 64? Is there anything that impressed you?
It is so fast. Yeah. This format just seems like... I actually kind of was surprised. I haven't watched the top 8, but I was surprised that the green-black Delirium deck did as well as it did. Because even though it has, you know, a 1-drop, some 2-drops, 3-drop, and then it just kind of goes up from there, it was like... I always felt like with Coco, which was playing a lot of the same, you know, types of creatures, that if I was just hard casting creatures, it was hard to keep up with faster decks, because even though my creatures all did something, it was like as soon as I got to play a 3-drop, they had like 5/1s, which obviously isn't... Never mind. but they don't have 5/1s, but you know what I mean? It's just like... I don't know how you can even get to 6 mana when they are crewing vehicles or, you know, pumping out 5/1s or making your big guys not able to block. It seems like every time you'd be casting a creature, they're just already doing something. So it seems like maybe a tough spot for a control deck to sneak in, because it is just a little ahead of the curve of even, you know, most aggro formats that we see. I did like that there was a black blue zombies deck. I did not think we would see like a zombies deck.
<Yes.
laughs> And I was looking through it and I was like, oh, this looks so fun and so themed. And I was excited to see Voldaren Pariah making her grand entrance. But yeah, the quickness, I'm eager to see what the Pro Tour brings, because typically, it slows down in the Pro Tour, but there are usually a few aggro decks that make the top 8. So, with a format this fast, I don't know if we'll be able to adjust more to the slower side, or, you know, if everybody will just be on whoever can play the most creatures the fastest wins.
Yeah, you know, seeing how fast these initial decks were, it made me think of that one white enchantment, mm-hmm. you know, where anytime a creature comes into play, you know, I think that could be really good right now, you know, gaining you a buffer against all those creatures. Because every time a creature the opponent controls comes into play, you get a life and it comes into play tapped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were kind of laughing about that card and just like, oh, it's so silly. But like after this weekend, I was like, that card could really do some work.
Yeah. And I was also curious, I saw a lot of people comparing Smuggler's Copter to... the card that got banned when the Affinity set came out, like right away, because
Skull Clamp.
Yes. Oh god, I could not think of it. But I saw people comparing it to it, and like in the top 8 there's 32 copies, everybody was playing 4 copies a piece, and when you look through the top 64, like most decks have 2 to 4 copies. So I don't know if Wizards might do something about that. Like, it's pretty prevalent as one of the best cards, at least making an appearance in this SCG.
Yeah, I mean, it has a really low casting cost. It costs two. I mean, it does so many things. You know, Hallie brought up the point that it blocks, you know.
Yeah.
If it just had the attack trigger, that would be one thing, but it does whatever you want it to do. The draw and discard is relevant, especially with Delirium still in the format. It takes a crew of one.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not hard to get a creature with one between the Fabricate and everything else. You know, 3/3 is respectable. There's a lot of great things about this card, and, you know, nobody's really running any main deck artifact removal. You know, that might change going forward. But, you know, this was something that a lot of people just didn't have a way to deal with. And I think that this is a card that could definitely affect how we build our decks going forward. This is a card that, I don't want to say warping, but maybe influencing is the right word, where it's like people are going to be going forward, okay, Deadweight isn't going to cut it. You know, I might need some natural states or whatever the case might be. And this is definitely going to influence how we play.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Chris, what did you take away from all these decks?
I found three decks that I really was into, and they don't really involve vehicles very much. The first one that I thought was really cool was that Teemer Aetherworks deck. Mm-hmm. That looked really awesome, you know, just being able to basically get a bunch of energy and be able to cast, you know, Emrakul and Ulamog. I thought that was awesome. You know, you have spells like these Puzzle Knots and, you know, other things that are just very easy to get into your graveyard, so it's not too hard to go off that way. Cathartic Reunion, Tune with Aether, and I like how in the sideboard they have Invasive Surgery, because
yes.
I've been wanting to like do something with that card, but I've been trying to think if that was a possibility. But in this type of deck, it would absolutely work in like 2 seconds. So this might be something that I would maybe want to put together just to play around with. I also liked that Jeff Hoogland decided to do his Jeskai Flash business and, you know,
rattle chains,
yep, coming on in. Selfless Spirit is going to be doing so much work, especially, you know, you were bringing up people possibly packing like artifact hate. I think a lot of people will be using Selfless Spirit to make sure their stuff is indestructible. So that's a little worrisome. And then I like how he's using 4 copies of Revolutionary Reva. Because so, I actually do really like that card. And I'm like, Glimmer of Genius. Man, you dug deep, Jeff. I'm like, this is...
That is a Hoagland deck, though, through and through.
Yeah, I was like, this is pretty good. And I like that he's got Galvanic Bombardment in the sideboard. I'm like, aw. I always thought that card was kind of cute, so mad props. And then I like that someone made a blue-white control deck. Like, I thought that was really awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, we got Dovin Bahn, Jace Unraveler of Secrets, who hasn't gotten really very much love. He's kind of, you know, just off in the corner crying to himself. but now, you know, he's getting a little bit time to shine. And Torrential Gear Hulk, it would be nice to, you know, kind of see how that card works out. And I appreciate them using Immolating Glare. That's not a card that I've really seen too many people use. It was something that I had thought about when I was brewing earlier today, and I was like, oh yeah, that might be a kind of cool card, you know, something fun to use from Oath. And I also thought it was cool that they have the 2 Authority of the Castles in the sideboard, like you were just saying. I think it's going to be a good card. I know some people don't dig it, but I am all there for it. So those three decks I thought were very interesting, and the Aetherworks one I just thought was like just very innovative, so I'm totally down for it.
Yeah, there were a couple decks I was very interested in. I thought the green-black graveyard deck by Ryan Hovis was really nice with Noose Constrictor, you know, discarding things like Haunted Dead Ghoul Steed was on camera. What? and Decimator of the Provinces. You know, they did a deck tech with him, and he said that he came to pig him out. And I was like, I want to pig him out. So so he had the Scrap Heap Scrounger. He had Perpetual Timepiece to help mill himself. This deck looked like a lot of fun. And it also looked affordable. You know, the Looter Copter thing. Those are now going for $16 a piece, which is like, hello. And so, you know, I like that his deck is a little affordable and it has cards that I already have in my possession. So I would totally sleeve this up. Caleb Shearer showed up with 4-Color Reservoir. When's the last time we had like a non-interactive deck in Standard? Was it Jeskai Ascendancy?
I think so.
It might have been Ascendancy, but this is completely up my alley. So he has 4 copies of Glint Nest Crane.
Yes.
Hello. to help find your reservoir, I assume. For Bonesaw. Hello. other all-stars like Cathar's Shield. That is a 0/3 artifact that gives you vigilance for those playing at home. Metal Spinner's Puzzle Knot. Prophetic Prism, Chris. Yay. Paradoxical Outcome for Tune with Either. Crush of Tentacles, hey. this just has so many wild cards, and I love the idea of just sort of almost like a storm in Standard. Like if he, I know he didn't do very well with this, and I know that he said he wanted to keep working on it, but if this ever became a thing, I would be on board so fast. You have no idea. Like, so I'm going to keep my eye on this because I have a lot of high hopes for this. But otherwise, I took away a lot of the same things that you guys did. One thing I did note is, Chris, you mentioned Selfless Spirit and how that kind of blanks things like Radiant Flames and even Kozilek's Return. But, you know, we also talked the other day about Green-Black Delirium and how they were losing Languish and that they were going to have to use cards that we perceived as being less good, like Flame Tendrils and Rising Miasma. Those are coincidentally cards that Selfless Spirit doesn't do anything against. So all those kind of three black uncommon board wipes didn't seem very good. You know, in the red-white decks, that's still enough to kill everything, and Selfless Spirit doesn't do anything. So I can see green-black Delirium continuing to do well, and I can see those board wipes that we didn't think were that great doing a lot of work in weeks to come, too. Mm-hmm. So. Saffron Olive, speaking of the first week, wrote an interesting article called Do Week 1 Results Actually Matter? And he was basically asking the question of, you know, do we put too much emphasis on this first week? Should we be making decisions about what decks we want to play based on this information? Or should we be waiting for the Pro Tour or some time after the Pro Tour? And he did a comparison from sets like Pharos, Khans of Tarkir, and things like that. You know, how much does the first week kind of influence your deck choices when you're deciding that you want to play Standard?
Not at all.
No.
Nope. Considering that I just brewed up a Gremlins deck today, clearly not at all. Because I figure at that point people are just, you know, kind of trying to feel it out. They're just being like, okay, you know, was the thing that was good still good? Do I have to change some cards out to still make it viable? You know, can I, you know, throw a bunch of cards from the new set in and make this work? You know, do I have all the cards that I need to play, you know, this deck to make it, you know, the best that it can be? I mean, we're talking about all these decks playing Smuggler's Copter. I mean, what if you didn't get that many? Luckily, I got 4.
Ma'am.
In all my pre-releases. So I've got my playset. But, you know, some people maybe don't have access to those cards, or maybe they're trying to still feel out what they really enjoy, you know, and that's why, you know, in the article he talks about waiting until the Pro Tour, and I think that that does make a lot of sense sometimes, because you have these people who are just going to be tuning and tuning and tuning and tuning these decks until they actually go and play and kind of see what shakes out from there. Prices go down and other things. Maybe, you know, a certain card is speculated at like a shit ton, and then they're just like, oh, that wasn't so good after all, and then the price drops. So I, most of the time, I try to do my own thing in general when it comes to Standard. But if something debuts at the Pro Tour and does pretty well, if I have the majority of the cards, I would throw it together. I personally have not purchased like any Kaladesh. I purchased a fat pack and just had my stuff from the pre-release. So yeah, I'm hoping to not have to invest too much into buying cards depending on what they are, but I'm at least eager to see what people do come up with, and I hope it's new and innovative stuff instead of more of the same.
Yeah, I usually wait for the Pro Tour also.
Me too.
You know, as Saffron Olive mentioned in his article, you know, I just sort of looked through all the charts where he did the comparisons between the SCG opens and the Pro Tours that follow them, and they look completely different, like so many different decks in the top 8. And I think that's mostly because, you know, when these teams go into Pro Tour testing, they look at what's in the top 8 of the SCG open and they think, okay, how can we beat these decks? And they end up with things that are completely different. And, you know, I wish that I could, you know, take that approach. I wish I were a better deck builder and that I had like a group of people who I could, you know, hold myself up with for a couple days, and so we could build a whole bunch of decks and test them all against each other and see what the best deck is. But unfortunately, that's not, you know, a part of my life right now, or at least not at the moment. But, you know, that's why I mainly spend the first couple weeks drafting, because that's, you know, a way that I can hit the ground running and just kind of like dig into Limited, you know, I don't have to be a deck builder in order to enjoy the new set. So that's kind of what I do. And I wait for the pros to kind of figure out what the best deck is.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. When you see a card as prevalent as Smuggler's Copter, I'm like, yeah, maybe I should trade for that. Because yeah. When it comes out, like, if it comes up at the Pro Tour, even if there's decks that are beating it, the price of it's still going to go up. So if you can trade for it early and then let those decks beat it, and then usually there's another deck a few weeks later that'll come in and beat those decks. And it's kind of just a cycle, I feel like, throughout Standard. And so, you know, if a card like that makes a really big splash in week one, am I going to go out and buy that deck? No. I am going to try and trade for that card so I have a playset. Because even if it doesn't do well in the next few weeks, it, like, odds are sometime in Standard it'll creep back up. And so I like to look at the decks. I think week one is important, though. Even if nobody goes out and buys decks, or even if you do, I feel like having that week one where everybody's really excited about the cards, but it's not the Pro Tour, is kind of like an important lead up. It's like, okay, these are what some people have come up with. There's a lot of hype around it. You see a lot of cool decks. And then the Pro Tour might be something drastically different. And I think that makes it even more fun and exciting to watch the Pro Tour, because seeing what, like, the best minds in Magic come up with, and then being like, okay, this is what everybody on the SCG Tour did, now let's see what the pro players are doing, and kind of seeing that difference, I think makes a new set coming into Standard a lot more fun.
Yeah, Hallie, you touched on the fact that you kind of like to draft, you know, in the weeks before the Pro Tour. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because my local game store barely had enough to fire Standard the other day. Like, I went to F&M and we had about 9 people. And normally we get 20 for Standard, about 20 for Standard and 20 for Modern. Modern had about 15 people, and then we had 2 draft pods going. And, yep. You know, kind of like you, everybody was like, we either don't have the cards or we just don't know what to play, and we'd rather not just show up with whatever we have. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to draft. Drafting also helps people get cards, so it serves you know, a number of purposes. Yep. But I was really surprised, because I felt really bad, because we had, like, the Standard side of the room, and they, you know, I don't even think they, I'm not even sure they fired on time, because they didn't, they had to wait for, like, the 8th person or a 9th person. Whereas Modern was going, you know, right on time. And I was like, oh, I felt so bad.
Yeah. Oh, I was just saying, my store was, like, the opposite. Everybody was drafting, and, like, maybe 10 people or less did Modern. Because we don't offer a Standard option. When it come the week that the set comes out, they only do Modern and Draft.
Oh.
So it's kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah. So, Katie, there was a big announcement the other day that I wanted to get your opinion on. They announced something on the Judge blog, the Level 2 Tester Certification. So what is this?
So they've kind of, they've been doing a lot of Judge program revamping in the last year. And this is kind of just an addition to that. And it's making it so that Level 2s who were previously, while mentoring Level 1s, or soon-to-be L1s, were also mentoring L1s to become L2s, but previously you had to have an L3 that could test those L2s. And in rural areas, especially Montana and Eastern Washington, there's, you know, not an L3 for miles and miles around. So, this is kind of just a stepping stone, I think, for the judge program to help field PPTQs. You need an L2. And they're becoming, you know, it seems like they're here to stay, even if not everybody's in love with them. So this is when you're an L2 and you already have a bunch of these skills and you've been mentoring L1s who want to become L2s, you can now test them and you don't need an L3. And this, I think, in my opinion, is super exciting. I do know that there was some shade being thrown at it from some people, but I am super excited about this. Like, this is the thing that rural areas have been needing, because if you have an L1 candidate who's ready for L2 and the nearest, GP is a $600 flight or a 14-hour drive away, like, getting them to become L2 is going to be a long road. And there's not usually circumstances where we do distance testing. There are a few exceptions, I think, for, like, people in Alaska. but it's not something that's commonly done. And so I think having an L2 in the area who's already acting as the area captain, who's already doing the mentoring and can now just administer the test and go over it with somebody, I think is super important. And I'm very excited for this L2 tester certification.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions about this because I just want to make sure I understand it correctly. So is this something that any old L2 can do, or do you specifically have to be labeled an L2 tester?
So you go through a checklist of things to qualify you as a tester. It includes doing reviews. You have to certify an L1. Okay, there it is. I thought it included certifying somebody, and then I didn't see it again, and I was like, oh, maybe you don't. But, so you have to certify a certain number of people in a certain time frame. You have to be doing reviews. You have to be in good standing, obviously. And then you do an interview with your regional coordinator or another level 3 that your RC approves. And then you kind of get this label as L2 tester. And the only place this label really is in the testing center and probably on your judge apps. And basically it just makes it so that you can create a test for them online. So it seemed like people who didn't like this were saying that an L2 tester was putting some L2s a step above other L2s. While it's really not, it's a bigger responsibility, but it doesn't mean you're any better at anything. Like maybe you're already doing these things and maybe other people are too, but some people will go through the certification and some people will be like, nah, I'm good. Not giving any more tests. So, you know, it's up to everybody's own discretion on whether or not they want to try and work at this. But I don't feel like it makes anybody better than anybody else. I mean, that's not really what judging is about. So it's all about learning and teaching. So I'm really excited for this.
Well, the majority of the criticism that I saw, because there were some judges that I follow that were having very public discussions, seemed to be around the fact that it's more work, but there's not necessarily the reward for doing so. And so there was some conversation about what is motivating people or what's going to incentivize people to do this if they're not really getting anything for it. There's no carrot at the end of the stick. And maybe the carrot is simply that you get to, you know, test more people and people get to move forward. But, you know, there were some folks that were saying, I'm going to be doing all of this and what am I getting out of this? And, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it sounds maybe a little selfish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm trying to think of it from your perspective, Katie, where you were driving 4 and 6 hours at a go just to do these events because there was nobody around. And maybe that's the reward in and of itself, that you don't have to do that.
Exactly.
And so it sounds like people who might be coming from bigger cities or who don't have that problem, maybe it's a case of like judge privilege. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that that gets resolved, or that I would hate for that to be the reason why people don't do this, because it does sound like it's a positive thing.
Yeah, and they tell you when you're judging that it's not really about the reward, like you should find, you know, happiness and enjoyment just from doing it. And while a reward is nice, I think that this is benefiting people who don't live in a metropolis city. I wholeheartedly agree. If I don't have to drive 4 hours and then 4 hours back in the same day to judge a PPTQ because I leveled somebody else up, I would wholeheartedly do my interviews and my reviews and do that, you know, interview with my regional coordinator and try and get the certification, because that makes my life so much easier. And it's also nice on the TO who's like, doesn't have to be like, well, how can I entice you to come 8 hours to like do this? So it makes it's just better for everyone. So I think it's rewarding the right people. And if people are going to be selfish about it, then maybe they should reprioritize their why they're doing this.
That just means we have a new middle name for you, like Katie the Tester Neil.
Oh, geez. Well, now I gotta get certified.
No pressure. I mean, you've been doing a lot of studying lately. It should be second nature for you.
Yeah, God, so much studying. Too much.
I saw that cheat sheet that you wrote with like the size 3 font. Kudos.
Oh, yeah. That was 2 pages, too. I didn't take a picture of the back page, but my hand was cramped.
The next time we go to a GP together, I think you need to do my sideboard notes. Just,
oh, I can squeeze them into like a 1-inch by 1-inch square.
Oh, you are hired.
Like 15 rounds of magic takes me like a quarter of a piece of paper.
Wow.
Or like a little life total pad. Like I have never gone through a life total pad unless I just lose it.
You know, I've started carrying one of the little wipe ones from Hot Sauce Games just because I tend to play really fast decks and my games are over so quickly it just doesn't make sense to really waste the paper anymore. So I have the little wipe marker and then I have my little hanky with me or my little cloth and then I just wipe the marker away and put the board away. And
convenient.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, I might play shitty decks, but I still care about the trees. I don't want to waste paper. I might not care if my opponent has fun, but damn it, I care about the trees. Let's let that be said. So before we go, there's a really deep issue that I kind of want to touch on that has been coming up recently. I feel like we've been seeing a renewed wave of negativity kind of hitting members of the community, specifically people who, you know, identify as social justice or feminists or trying to, you know, people trying to improve diversity in the community. There's been a new wave of attacks and harassment on the Tumblr front. The young man named Zach, who was the ambassador at PAX, he was getting some really grisly messages on Tumblr and having to deal with some really shitty people. MTA has experienced a rash of negative comments on their YouTube videos. I experienced some videos on the Magic Mike's videos to the point where I had to ask them to either turn off the comments or to moderate them, which Evan and Ruben have never had to do before. And Emma Handy recently faced it in the SCG chat, and it just feels like this renewed wave that's kind of come out of nowhere. You know, being that we are visible women in the community, you know, how do you guys deal with this? How do you think that we as a community should deal with this? And what do you think when you see this happening to people that we know and love?
We actually wanted to talk about this because Emma made a post earlier today about it, where she said that, you know, she aspires to do tournament coverage, but she's afraid to, you know, to do that. She's concerned that, you know, her presence on a stream would bring a lot of negativity to SCG, which is, you know, which is a shame. Like, she shouldn't feel that way at all because she is, you know, a great Magic player and probably very insightful. Like, I've never heard her do commentary, but I'm sure, you know, given her tournament experience, she would be great at it. I'm sure she would have a lot of really great things to say. And I think it's a shame that, you know, she felt like, the comments that she was receiving somehow disqualified her from something that she would probably excel at. And I just wanted to bring this up because, you know, I do think it needs to be talked about. It's something that we've all dealt with. It's something that I've dealt with. I've basically been on indefinite hiatus from streaming because I've received harassment for it. So, I don't know. It's definitely a tough issue. And I think, it's, the kind of thing that, you know, you just kind of have to, I don't know, like you kind of have to grow a thick skin, but it's not just that. It's like, I don't know. It's, I'm sorry. It's really hard for me to talk about this because it's, you know, something that you have to live with, but that you shouldn't have to live with, you know? So, you know, there are some days where you kind of say, you know, I can't stream or I can't do this because, you know, the stress is just eating you alive. But, I give a ton of credit to, you know, the people who kind of soldier on through this because it's more than any human being should have to deal with.
Yeah, it's, sorry, all the feelings.
I'm feeling a certain way right now.
No, that's cool. I don't know. It's weird for me to even know that people get harassed in this manner. Like, I guess it just all seems very mind-boggling to me. Like, I know that you can be harassed no matter how you identify and all these things, but it's just unfortunate that it seems like, especially when it's towards women, like, it comes with, like, its own special sort of malice. I don't know if that makes any sense. But that's how I feel about it. I haven't had to deal with, like, a lot of things in the community like some people have. And I really hope I never do, because it's going to be a bad time if that happens. I don't like knowing that people that I care about and respect and that make, you know, good content, or are good players, or, you know, just are awesome people, are having other people bring them down. People who are insignificant, who are on the internet just ranting. It's like, who are you? Nobody. Exactly. And it just makes me feel bad that those people that don't matter are making something matter that shouldn't to people that actually do matter. And I remember when we did Community Super League and some people didn't like my commentary. Well, I didn't like it either, but, you know, it was...
You did fine.
They were like, get Chris off the mic. It's like, don't worry. I'm not going to do it anymore. It's like, that's not my strong suit. That's totally fine. I gave it the college try. I'm willing to do anything once. And it wasn't my bag. And I'll leave it for people that it is. But I guess I just don't understand where so much hate or disgust or whatever builds up towards people that are just doing something that they love. If you don't like it, if you don't like them because they wore a red shirt, if you don't like them because they said the word butts or something, like, whatever. Like, you know, you have your reasons to not like them, but just...
Butts.
Yes, I'm just saying, like, as an example, like... But, like, I hope you have a really good reason not to like someone. I hope you have a really good reason that you feel like you need to, you know, spit your hateful comments on, like, YouTube videos. It's like, you're not offering anything constructive. Why are you here? You know, you can have these thoughts. You know, get a fucking diary. You know, write your hateful thoughts in there. You know, start your own podcast. Go on a big rant. Go on a to-do. But, like, all you're doing is just, you know, making other people feel like shit and, like, trying to, like, troll them. And that's just stupid. Like, you could be doing better things. You wasted time doing this. And I guess it just makes me sad for that person that they feel the need to do these things and to bring other people down. And it's like, and then it does kind of bring up the question of if people... If some of the people that are being targeted, specifically a lot of ladies that we know, you know, if they had been men, people had just been like, lol, he's just kind of stupid, whatever. But the fact that, you know, you're going into detail and saying how you want to hurt somebody or, you know, tearing down their appearance or just, you know, going on and on, it's like, why? Why did this specific person deserve that? They didn't. And I just hope that, you know, they can... search into their soul or into their life or whatever to figure out why they need to be such a negative person. I mean, in all the time that you spent being so negative, you could have done something positive with your life, but that was your choice. And I just really wish it would stop. I know it never will, probably. It's just like anything else, you know, in the world. There's good and there's bad. There's, you know, the yin and the yang and all that. But I just would hope better for our community. And I would like to think that there are a lot of people there that are doing things to bring people up instead of tear them down. And I feel like the more people that listen to our show or listen to MTA or, you know, find other outlets on the internet, realize something that they didn't before and that they don't have to have this negativity that seems to come from nowhere.
Guys, can I tell you a secret?
Yes. Love secrets.
So... When I really don't like someone, this is what I do. I ignore them like a fucking normal person.
Hello.
I do not, like, spew hate towards them. I don't write them mean messages. I'm just like, oh, I'll unfollow that person. Not digging it. Oh, they're on the stream? Yeah. I'll turn the stream off for now. I'll come back later and see if there's somebody I do like. Like, what... What makes you think that it is okay to act like this? And I feel like...
And it's easier. It's also so easy to just click, close the window.
Yeah.
That's all you gotta do. It takes 2 seconds and you go about your life. It's easier.
It's so much easier. My fingers didn't even have to move at the speed of light so I could type out a mean, nasty message. Like, I literally had to do one click. One click and it's done. What I do want to point out is that while I admire people who keep doing what they love in spite of all of the hate that is being thrown at them, I think we need to call people out more than we do. Because I think that there are things happening that needs to be addressed, has to be addressed for anything good to come out of it. Because I remember when I was waiting to do my turn at CSL, and I think it was just Chris and I that night, and I was like... very nervous to do commentary, and somebody in the chat started saying something about how the girlfriend bracket was doing bad or whatever, and Chris was just like, hey, quit doing that. And after a little bit, he apologized. And he, well, I, sorry, I shouldn't assume it was he. Could have been a she. Could have been somebody on the spectrum.
There you
go. But she was like, you don't need to be like that. And eventually they were like, you know, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm sure it must be hard to do what you guys are doing. You changed my mind. And I was like, that was so easy. And while not everybody will be that logical because people are not logical, things like that can make a big difference. Like, I still remember that conversation, and I'm still, I'm one, amazed that that person apologized, because being able to do that and not just keep trolling, I feel like takes a lot of self-control for people who are into this negativity in the first place. But I just feel like if we keep calling people out and being like, this is not okay, and making it a bigger deal, maybe people will catch on. And I also really like seeing people support other people. Like, even if it's somebody just being like, hey, your outfit looks nice today, or, you know, whatever other random compliment, or the outpouring of love that we've seen on Twitter for the people who are getting this verbal harassment from people who are like, I'm sorry you're going through that. Like, know that I admire you as a public figure and I love your work. Just seeing those messages means so much. And it might not make anything better in the moment, but I feel like for bystanders to see that love more than the hate is also really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot to say about this, and I've personally been affected by it to, you know, an unreal degree. You know, there's a lot to unpack here. You know, I think I agree with everybody and everybody, you know, what you all just said, and, you know, I'm going to kind of go through it one by one. You know, Katie, you mentioned the, if you don't like something, turn it off. I tried two new podcasts last week that weren't about magic. I didn't enjoy them, and I just stopped listening to them. There are many content creators in the magic community and even the World of Warcraft community that I don't enjoy. I simply don't click on their links. I simply don't read their work. I simply don't follow them on Twitter. Maybe I've blocked them on Twitter. I don't care that much. I'm not that invested in it where I feel the need to go to their iTunes pages, go to their blogs, and leave a shitty comment. It's not that serious for me. Their work just wasn't for me. It's not even anything personal. It's just that I didn't enjoy their show, and maybe I'm not the audience, and that's totally fine. I don't understand, you know, like you said, Katie, where that passion comes from of, I can't just not like this. I need to fucking hate it. And I don't understand that, you know? And likewise, these are also the same people who won't compliment people. One of the things I've learned as a content creator is it's difficult to get people to comment whether they like you or they hate you. And so, you know, you will take the time out to say you don't like somebody, but likewise, are you also telling the people you enjoy that you like them too? Like, why are you passionate about hating something, but you're not passionate about loving it? You know what I mean? Like, that's what you're choosing to get emotional about. I don't understand that. I am continuously, I don't, and that's the other thing, you know, RuPaul made a comment about, I don't pay attention to the people hating me because I'm too busy loving the people who love me. I would rather tell Emma how proud of her I am, or, you know, Chris, how proud I am of you for all the top eights you've had recently in your PPTQs, than go on someone's page and be shitty. That's where I'm choosing to invest my energy and my feelings, and I don't understand why other people can't do that. I also agree that we need to be more aggressive. You know, I don't want to hear things like, it's just the internet. No, it's not the internet. These are people. These are people. I'm a person. It feels bad. If it was as simple as flipping a switch, I would love to flip a switch and not feel bad. I don't think anybody wants to feel bad. When somebody passes away, you don't want to feel sad. When you like somebody who doesn't like you back, you don't want to feel that way either. These are really crummy ways to feel. And if we could turn those emotions off, we would, but we can't. And I'm all for screenshots and reporting and naming handles and whatever we need to do because, you know, saying things like it's just the internet or it'll go away or, well, they don't really matter. They do matter. They do keep people up at night. It has kept me up at night. And I think until we sort of, you know, see more action, I think it's going to keep happening. And ultimately, people only do what you let them get away with. And you're seeing it even with major news websites. NPR has abolished their comment section, the New York Times, the Toronto Sun. These are major organizations that are saying, we can't devote the resources to this anymore. We can't be here to babysit these sections. Nothing good is coming from them. And just saying, if you want to converse about these things, you have your own Facebook page, you have your own Twitter page, you don't need to do it here. Again, people are doing crummy things, and so they're taking that venue away from them. And I'm completely for that. I'm for, you know, chat is not a right, comments are not a right. And if you act like baboons, you have every reason to have them taken away, and I don't feel bad about that. And you know, I do feel really passionate about it, and I would love to see some more change and some more aggressive tactics used, because it's just and it's just shitty, because you know at the end of the day it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody had come up to me in person and said these things, fuck you. Like, it wouldn't bother me in the least. But, you know, I don't like that I'm up at night. I don't like that I'm having to fight with my peers and beg Evan to disable the comments. That I don't like going to events and being quiet and introverted because I don't trust I don't like playing an opponent and going, did this guy leave me a review? Is this guy one of the commenters? Is this guy? I don't like that. I like being open and honest. And, you know, it certainly made me guarded and more defensive. And I don't like living that way. And so, you know, I'm all for aggressive reporting and blocking and tactics and just whatever you need to do. Because ultimately it's, you know, you got to do what you got to do for your own safety, your own security. And, I'm all for that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also wanted to point out, I think Hallie left a really good comment on, Emma's page when she said, like, you know, if this is getting in the way of you enjoying this, like, I just feel like people who are getting harassment shouldn't feel bad for stepping away for however right. long it takes them, because, you know, maybe soldiering on isn't what you need to do for your own mental health. And the only person mm-hmm. who matters at the end of the day is really you and your sanity. So, yeah. like, if you're one of those people that's getting the hate and it's, you know, it's not worth it to feel awful about stuff, like, yeah, turn off the comments. You know, don't go to an event if you don't want to go to it because you think you'll have a worse time than you will a good time. Whatever you need to do, you know, to be enjoying this the way you want to enjoy it, you need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the tricky thing about that is that a lot of times it's sold as a win or lose proposition. Mm-hmm. We're like, so let's say you do take a break from your podcast or from competing. People will say to you, well, don't let them win. Mm-hmm. You're letting them win. And it's like, well, no, I'm actually taking my power back, and I'm doing what I need to do. And there's no, it's not a win or lose game. Like, it's not as simple as that. And, you know, that's certainly something that's influenced me, is this feeling of like these unnamed, invisible, unwashed masses, where it's like, oh God, I'm letting them win. And I'm going, wait a minute, who are they? There's no sides here. There's no, you know, if anything, it's the opposite. You know, I respect somebody that turns off the comments and says, you know what, you're not going to talk to me like that. I respect somebody who says, you know what, I come first, and I'm not going to do this and strain myself. I think that's more empowering and more of a statement than just sort of quietly taking it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people who can quietly take it, and God bless them. I'm not, if that's their coping strategy and it works for them, far be it for me to judge you. But, you know, I would just love it more if we treated the people who do speak up, and it's not in such a sad light of like, oh, the comments just finally got to her. No, she just fucking had enough. Like, you know, just really spinning that narrative, and not in a loss way, not in a poor thing, kind of, not in a defeated way, but in kind of the opposite way, in a very empowering way. And I think that might help make people make those decisions if they didn't feel like it was, I'm letting them win, I'm losing something. Mm-hmm. I think spinning that is important as well. So I know that keeps people from making the decisions too, is feeling like they've been defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So, because we're all warriors, man.
Yeah, we are. or you're like me, and my statement about a lot of that stuff is, you know, from The Big Lebowski, where the dude's just like, that's just like your opinion, man. That's how I try. That's how I try to handle most things. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky. Like I said, it's something that, like, you know, if it were anybody else, like, I really wouldn't care. Like, if you met me in person, you'd agree that I'm pretty strong and nothing really gets to me. And Lord knows there are people at the office who don't like me, and that's fine. I don't like you either. But it's just there, and you get so mad at yourself too, because it's like, you know, we have all of these great reviews, we have all of this love, and yet one comment is enough to just topple it all. And you're like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, why? You get mad at yourself because you're just like, I should know better. This is nothing. And it's a lot. There's a lot of angles to tackle this from. And I really would love to see more people discussing it and, you know, how they cope with it. And it's fascinating, maybe, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. but, you know, just the way that everybody responds to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anything else before we wrap up the show?
Well, on a lighter note, Chris's and my baseball teams are both in the playoffs.
Yes. Hey, what team is that?
Well, so Chris has the Cubs, and they are definitely in the playoffs. Yes. Okay. The Mets need to win a wild card game against the Giants in order to move on to then play the Cubs.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
I'm very excited.
Baseball.
I'm Googling this as we speak.
You know what I think of when I hear the word Mets now because of school is just cancer. Just cancer. I'm like, oh, Mets in the chest, Mets in the liver. Who knows? It's probably cancer.
So Mets in the playoffs is just a bad scene for you.
But I'll still root for him, Hallie. It's okay.
I appreciate that.
I will be streaming this Saturday. I will be streaming the MTGO Legacy Challenge at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. The proxy guy made me a really cute, simple overlay for the stream. I'm working on my music. It's probably going to be very gay, like Kylie Minogue gay. So, like, if you're into that sort of thing, come have a good time with me. Britney will be there. Beyonce will be there. Very but it'll be fun. Lots of dredge, lots of good times, lots of pop music. twitch.tv/originalasterisk. I'm going to dredge my brains out. And hopefully you'll come cheer me on because it should be a lot of fun. And I get to go to Legacy Night on Wednesday. And so it's just going to be a week of Legacy. And I'm looking forward to
it. And
that.
When is your stream, Aaron? You said?
Saturday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Oh, I'll have to miss it. Now I'm sad.
Well, I will archive it so you can watch it again. And I will be going through the entire Beyonce album at least once. So.
This is good. Fine.
Yes.
I'm just saying, like, it's going to be a pretty weird time. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can find me on Snapchat at HalcanSan. And you can read my articles in the Card Kingdom newsletter. Please subscribe so that you receive those. And this week I talked to Erin about dredge. So that's pretty exciting.
Nice.
And I didn't bribe her to do it. She came to me on her own volition.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or Twitch. I'll probably be streaming in the next 1 to 2 weeks. Actually streaming. That's almost a pinky swear. I was thinking about it, but
there was the quiet between us. Like,
No, I'm really going to try. I don't have any exams this week or next week, so I should be able to make time.
I'm going to be more surprised when you actually do. Like, it's going to be like the girl who cried wolf. Like, you're going to tweet the link. I'm like, oh, sure, Katie's streaming. I'm going to click on the link and expect it to be like a GIF or something. And you're going to be really streaming and it's going to just blow my mind.
Maybe I'll just put a GIF on there of like me laughing. So I'm like, everybody go check out my stream. It's actually just me being like, ha, 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 suckers, you fell for it. Anyways, you can also find me on Snapchat. I'm trying to expand my repertoire from just Watson to other things that aren't Watson. So if you're interested in that, it's katie.neil14.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at thkriz. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Snapchat is cryptic command with K's. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. And I will also be attending DP Atlanta, rolling deep there, this weekend, so if you see me, come say hi. Don't be shy. I like meeting new people. And, yep, it'll be fun.
Yay. I'm going to be rooting for you. I hope you have a really good time and that you take lots of pictures. Yeah. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAsterisk. That's OriginalAsterus. You can email me at OriginalAsterisk@gmail.com. Come see me on Saturday at twitch.tv/OriginalAsterisk. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. Patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket if you'd like to toss us a couple bucks. Otherwise, we come out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com and you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Thank you all so much for listening and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.